As long as I wear this badge, I will protect your rights, protect you in the city limits, no matter what you think about me and what this uniform.
I don't think anything badly.
Well,
but why do the kids fear you?
Why do the kids fear
you? I'm 47 years old, my friend. I'm 47 years old. I've seen enough.
Mr. Norris doesn't fear me.
Well, he fears me more than he fears you. Why do the kids fear you? Why do you think? Why do you think? Why do you think the kids fear you? Why do you think they get uncomfortable when all of a sudden two cops pull up and they're leaning against the wall and just sort of gazing?
You know what? I don't know why.
Why don't you ask them?
I don't know why.
Why don't you ask them? And in asking them, they'll see more of the humanity inside of you.
Well, you know what, Rabbi? Is that sometimes they don't want to talk to us. And so for me not to disrespect them, I'm not going to go over there and have a conversation with them unless they come to me. Because you know what? Like I said, sometimes I don't feel any love here.
You know, most people don't call me Rabbi where I live because we don't like this separation of titles and so forth. People can't really pronounce my Hebrew name, so they call me Rabbi, which makes it easier. For the most part, I do not prefer people call me titles because all of a sudden there's that barrier between one and the other.
Did you already put the barrier there by saying that our uniforms with the...
No, you put the barrier by carrying a gun.
Well, you did, see?
You know what?
See, I'm not carrying a gun.
You know what?
Have you been to England? The Bobbies don't carry guns unless they have to.
You know, Rabbi?
I like the old days when the sheriff would see people coming in on the horses and said, young fella, you got to check in your guns with the sheriff, and when you leave, you can get them back.
Hey, I've been to Israel, and you know what? They carry guns around everywhere they go.
I don't.
Soldiers carry guns around everywhere.
Well, soldiers, they're soldiers. We're talking about police officers.
Those are the police.
Not necessarily.
Can I say something? I haven't really said anything. You say that you're here to, like, protect and serve. It's like whenever you guys come to this area and we're hanging out over here, you guys find things. You'll put sidewalk chalk. If a little kid was drawing on the sidewalk with chalk, he wouldn't get a ticket. His parent wouldn't get a ticket. Some kid asked somebody for a cigarette, a fellow human being. Nobody, you know, asked another person, a brother, a sister, for a cigarette. After he had exchanged a light with him,
Can I tell you something? You want to make a change? You want to make a difference down here, a change? Go down to Palace Arts and say, can you donate some paper so we don't get tickets? We can draw on a piece of paper.
Did you tell that to a child as well, with parents? Would you tell them just to clean up their messes?
I mean, that's the thing, is like the laws are different because we look like this and because we don't necessarily have a home.
Have you ever asked?
Have you
gone to Palace Arden and asked?
I didn't draw on the sidewalk. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about if a little kid or if, you know, some yuppie was drawing on the sidewalk.
Or a college student from the University of California, Santa Cruz.
You wouldn't just run up and give him a ticket. You'd probably give him a warning.
How do you know that?
Because I've seen people get away with things, and then I've seen two police officers up and down the mall. Random people just doing things every day.
What days? Because I work till Wednesday through Saturday.
Hey, you know what I think?
I just think that you guys post up here and try to pick out the littlest, smallest things. And you give tickets to kids that don't have money to even eat.
You know what? Unfortunately, this has started out as a good conversation, but the rabbi's getting a little hot here.
Nobody's getting hot.
Come on, Rabbi.
Officer, you're under. I don't have eggs. You don't have to worry.
Nobody's getting hot.
Well, I'm really going to drive him out of here. Rabbi just kissed Officer Azur. Okay?
But see, that's the thing I'm trying to, communicate and like express these feelings that I have. Like, this really upsets me. This hurts me. I'm not a criminal.
Who's saying you're a criminal?
I'm treated like I am.
How? I greeted you. How? How?
I'm not necessarily.
When were you treated as a criminal?
When I came up to ask a police officer a question. Oh, what day was it? It was Tuesday or Wednesday, and it was a big call. I'm not necessarily talking about you, but I'm talking about your fellow coworkers.
Well, you know what? I think everybody in our police department is okay. And you know what? If you had a bad experience, well then... I wasn't there, and I can't tell you what happened.
This is the only conversation that I've been able to have with a police officer for more than a minute. And they don't, like, I have never done
Well, it's because Mr. Norris and I get along so well.
See, that doesn't even...
Well, come on, Mr. Norris, you got
to
admit.
I want you to know when I speak to the man, it's going to be in the next call.
Kind of.
You can tell me. Take care.
It's like I have feelings. I speak from my heart, and it's like they can't understand because... They don't. They have a heart. They just—they're tied in it.
It's checked with the uniform.
Yeah, it's so sad. It makes me so sad. I couldn't imagine energetically what that gun does to have wearing that gun on their body. Energetically, what that does. I mean, what a block. What a block. I send them love. They don't know it, but I send them love all the time.
Does she seem loving to you? What do you think?
Yeah. There you go.
I offered fairy dust to the officers
Your name
last
is?
Night. I'm Willow Astoria.
Willow, I'm Robert. Where's my
Oh, right here.
You want to know what?
I'd love to know.
I'm so glad that you're here. I really appreciate you.
I think we're pretty glad you're here, too.
Yeah.
I asked the police officer, I heard from the, well, we all heard at the council meeting that the police commissioner was saying that it's very difficult to recruit officers. And I asked the officer, like, you know, why do you think so? And he said, because...
Can't afford to buy a house here. Can't afford to buy a house here.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Too expensive.
No question about it.
The thing is, I know that you're way too expensive.
That's why it's strange to hear you say that you've never enforced a law that you felt was unjust. Because you must have enforced the sleeping ban at some point.
Actually, no. Mr. Norris, you know, I've been in the Beast Flats the whole time.
You never issued a sleeping citation.
I've never issued a sleeping
citation. No, the other officers on this force have.
You know what? I couldn't tell you who.
Oh, I think you could.
Okay.
If you couldn't, then you're not as well informed as I thought you were.
I got a question.
What's up, Juan? What do you need?
Okay, earlier you guys were talking about how, or I think the I'm not sure what the subject was, but you guys come down here and. You know that makes us feel awkward.
Why?
I don't know why. I don't feel awkward, but I know that feeling is here when you guys come around. And how'd you guys feel if all of us just went and parked our cars in front of your police station and just started hanging out? Do you honestly think that wouldn't, like,
that bother you?
Make us,
that wouldn't bother
us feel funny?
That wouldn't bother us.
In all honest truth?
Honest truth, that wouldn't bother us.
24 hours a day, every day, we're there. You can't say that somebody, one of your fellow officers, I'm not saying yourself, but can you honestly tell me that? I'm just trying to get...
What are you trying to say, Juan?
I'm not sure, honestly.
Okay.
But
as long as we understand.
No.
Okay.
Let me...
Well, I can say something here, but I won't. You have a very youthful demeanor because of your diminutive size.
Yeah, I know. It fools people. I don't like it anymore.
Beautiful. It's good to have 21 years of experience behind
you. Yeah, it is. I enjoy it.
I don't have a problem with you or him, even though you wrote me a ticket. But that was my fault. Because I didn't know you couldn't skateboard here. I was only here 2 days, and then we became acquainted.
But you got to admit, you were skateboarding pretty good.
I am a good skateboarder.
Yeah, I saw you. Yeah, from
I think
the
it's
corner,
funny
yeah.
that Santa Cruz is like a home base for skateboarding, but it's like so illegal. You know what I mean? Like there's so many, like this is where like skateboarding started, the Santa Cruz. Skateboard Santa Cruz. Stickers everywhere, just like you get in trouble, you get tickets. I think it's ironic too that you get a ticket and you're homeless and you can't even eat, you know?
They're sleeping.
In the morning you wake up and you're just like, well...
You know, trying to sleep and wake up and have a job so that you can go get a house. You know, it's like this vicious cycle. Catch 22 is all over the place.
Well, you know, this is nice, friendly conversation we're having, but the main objective of the police department is to disperse this group of people. That's the reason they're here.
Why?
Well,
no
because they believe that's what the merchants want them to do, and I suspect that's what
nobody's
they're...
Nobody's even, right now, like, nobody's even, like, none of these stores are open.
At night, people should be allowed to sleep up and down this avenue because it wouldn't bother anybody.
It wouldn't.
However, they wouldn't be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And these guys would make sure it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So,
I know that they're only following orders, and I hope that someday they can, hopefully one day they can free themselves. I pray for that.
Yeah. For their individual spirits, yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, someone else will take their place.
Yeah.
What do you think about gangs?
They're a gang.
Sounds like they dress alike. They have secret
languages.
Are you
saying these guys have gang colors on? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yes, they do. And they carry weapons.
These gang colors.
Those are gang colors.
They have secret codes and signals.
Yes.
They'll back each other up without question, without knowing what's going on. You know, they'll support each other no matter what. Right or wrong, you know. I see many parallels.
They're very well armed too.
They are. I noticed that. Yeah, they are ready to kill.
Good communication. Good communication.
Exactly. Best technology.
They're well trained and highly organized.
It's amazing the parallels I see.
And there's a lot of loyalty there.
There is. Like I was saying, unquestioning loyalty. Right or wrong, they will kill other people to support their fellows. You know,
well,
they don't even
have
to
admire that, right? That's
it is. I do admire. That's really something.
I'm being sarcastic.
That loyalty is amazing. Not a place I'd like to go, though. I value my individuality too much.
Did you see that poster that they had up?
Which was?
It had a picture of a police officer, and it said, "There's a gang in town. Beware." And it just, like, listed all these things, had a picture of a police officer.
Where was this here?
Oh,
I'd love to have gotten a picture of that.
Great. And there's this lady, and she was standing around with her little kid, and she looked really straight-laced, and it said on there, "Warn your friends and neighbors," and I was like, "Hey, there's a gang in town." Pointing to the poster, and she's like, I was like, "It said to warn your friends and neighbors." She didn't, she was really taken aback by that.
Great.
Made me laugh.
Any concluding statements, guys?
Mr. Norris, you have a wonderful evening. Or night.
Oh, look at that.
There you go.
Sweet.
Take care. Anytime you need assistance. Oh, you're not going to shake my hand?
I'm going to give you a pat on the shoulder.
Rabbi, why isn't he shaking my hand?
I don't know, but
I'll... He's retreating again. He's just trying to be affectionate.
Yeah.
See, now, in my culture, you know what you have done? You would have given me a kiss back on the cheek.
No.
But you're so homophobic, that's the problem. See, in my culture, you'll see men walking down the streets hand in hand, and nobody would ever say, "Look at those faggots over there." No, they would kiss each other on the cheek, and everybody's happy.
All right. You need a shave first, too.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you have a good night. You take care.
All of us. Sir, you have a good night.
Good night, David.
Remember, let's stop these drug busts and do something real. Proposition 36.
I always, you know what? I was raised by my grandma about with old values, and I want to make a difference.
Right. Get the bars. You'll make a difference.
Oh, yeah. A little question.
Well, you talked to the man that got assaulted yesterday?
No, I talked to the man that supposedly did the assaulting. And actually what happened, and what probably fits...
No, Officer Gunther, who allegedly did the assaulting.
No, he didn't.
He didn't do the assaulting.
From what he told me, and from the manner that he told me in, I believe that probably he wasn't. He didn't hit him.
So you just... You were deluded into believing that he struck the guy.
It looked like it from that angle.
I see. What actually happened, though, was he was brushing a fly away from his face.
I did not say that he actually hit him. I didn't see it hit. So it could have been part of his struggling, and I could have noticed the mark afterwards.
So Gunther was the second police officer there?
Gunther was one of the police officers, was the second police officer here.
Right. So we had Gunther and Azua.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I probably got a much better interview than you guys did.
So did Gunther take you aside, or did you take Gunther aside?
I took him aside.
And you asked him, did you hit this guy yesterday?
What I did is I pretty much engaged him in conversation, kind of, you know, cautiously to avoid, you know, a situation, so I could read him. And I decided that, you know, he was pretty straight, and he'd give me a straight.
What did you say what he arrested the guy for?
I asked him about what happened on Wednesday and gave him a chance to say something, and then I gave him a direct question, and he gave me a direct answer.
So what did he say happened?
What he said happened was that he fell. Brian fell. He hit his face on a piece of bark. And when the officer, and he was crawling away, he fell because the officer tripped him.
Gunther tripped him?
Yes.
Was that intentionally, you think? Did he trip him intentionally?
Yeah, but they are, remember, carrying 40 pounds of gear.
So, wait a minute. This officer with 40 pounds of gear nimbly tripped this kid?
That's the only way he could do it, because he couldn't run fast enough. He may have tripped him, he may have used
the knife. Brian was trying to leave, and he stopped him by tripping him.
Yeah, Brian made it only like 3 to 5 feet. He may have been just backing off. I don't know. But from what I was told, it's enough to...
Okay, I got to ask a quick question. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You saw the chalking incident, and it was Azua who offered, who did the chalking ticket.
He assisted. He grabbed one of the gentlemen who was drawing on the sidewalk. The lady, Miss Holly Hoy, the blue shirt cop, said, "Hold on, be right there. I'll catch up." She said, "I need to see your ID." And then he said, "Okay, well, hold on. We have to go grab it for our backpack." And his girlfriend's ID was in the backpack, so he was gonna go ahead and do that. But Officer Azua just walked up to the person, grabbed him, stood him up, and searched him for his wallet and found it and took it out of his pocket and said, "See, you do have an ID." Isn't that funny?
That was the officer that was here?
Yes.
That was the one you were talking
to. Really?
Yeah. And then...
Because it was criminal chalking.
Then proceeded to tell the girl that we'll just verbally take your name down, which doesn't make any sense, because in every other case, even if it's a female, they would just demand an ID. And considering she did have one in her backpack and still said, "Don't worry about it, we'll just verbally take yours down."
They differentially treated the man and the woman, is what you're
saying. I think so. Yes.
Okay. I appreciate that bit of information. We'll be hoping to play this on Sunday. Again, this is a lot of tape, so I'm not sure how much of it we can play.
That's fine.
But I appreciate the information. And
no problem.
Was a complaint filed about this chalking incident or not?
Some people got some tickets for it, actually.
Did the people file complaints against the police?
I don't know yet. They just got their tickets today.
There wasn't anything anything written yet.
Okay, 423, you know these people, right?
I know some of them.
Okay, tell them if they want to file complaints, they should call Robert.
I got
that's
the number.
Me.
I'll give it
423
to
Huff.
Okay.
Easier number. 423 HUFF. Talking to. And it's one interview after another
here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Indeed, the police seem to be cracking down on Pacific around chalking incidents, and I heard some more about that a couple days ago. The tape you just heard was from a week ago, Thursday, and involved a conversation between Officer Zazua, Officer Gunther, Rabbi Chaim Levin, myself, a couple of other people, and Willow, to call her a homeless person or a rainbow person. A very interesting conversation, and then we heard an interview afterward about Officer Gunther and an incident where one person said he initially hit a man named Brian, another then that was corrected to say he tripped a man named Brian at the farmer's market a week ago Wednesday. And again, it's of course always a difficulty sorting out these accounts, but I think that you get closer to the truth by talking to more people, and I'm glad that that kind of dialogue happens. On the line with us, however, and someone we've had in the studio, or at least certainly in the studio by phone before, is Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz activist, TRUSC activist, Donna Dice Marocchi. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good. So how's the Tenants' Rights Union these days?
Well, the website's got some more information on it. I have somebody helping me with that.
Mm-hmm. Where is the website for those who want to reach it?
It's Tilda Tenants' Rights, and the server is Cruisers.
And run that by real slowly one more time.
The server is Cruisers.
Uh-huh.
If you go into Cruisers, and you go under the menu where it says
Tenants'
Services.
Rights. Services.
It lists, you know, the different services, and we're under there. Or you can go straight through with the, after the slash, you put the tilde sign, and then Tenants' Rights, all one word.
So http://www.
Well, I don't usually go in that way, so I don't have
I
to
got
hear
you.
On.
Well, for those who want to get to the website, give a call to 423-HUFF. We'll find out all the exact details of how to do that. You can also contact the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz at 426-0644. So Hey, go ahead. You were saying you got the website up, and I know you were doing a lot of unlawful detainer work a couple of years ago, and you had more support going to courts and actually advising people that their unlawful detainers have been filed against them and what their rights and defenses were. And then, of course, you got stymied in this by a new policy at the courts that kind of shielded them from letting you know what unlawful detainers had been filed until it was almost too late to deal with them, right?
Right. They put a 60-day hold on the files.
Mm-hmm. So what, have you been to court in any unlawful detainers in the last year?
No, I've just talked to people that call on the phone and need some support and information. And
is there an increasing number of people who, I'm sorry.
There's always people that call, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's your sense? You've been kind of monitoring the rent situation in Santa Cruz the last few years. Is it getting worse?
Well, actually, yes. In a recent survey that was taken, or the list of the unlawful detainers for the last few years, it showed that actually in 1999, the year after we were doing our really heavy unlawful detainers all the time and going to court and doing the whole thing, that they actually went down a little bit in 99, then went up again in 2000. So 1999 is right when we were unable to continue doing it, and they went down probably because, you know, we had made a great effect on the system,
mm-hmm,
and the courts, and so they were a little more careful. But then, you know, the last year, home prices and rents went up so sky high, you know, as again, they felt like they could do whatever the hell they wanted, and evictions went up in the last year.
Mm-hmm. I know that in this today's Sunday Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel, as some call it, the daily paper, there's a couple of editorials actually around the housing situation in Santa Cruz, affordable housing. And I think you went to an affordable housing conference locally, did you not?
Yes, actually, the editors of the paper called together politicians from their offices, people to represent them that were in high position, members of the Santa Cruz City Council, Soquel Water Board, realtors, you know, everybody in the room was basically over 50, I think, and, you know, they had quite a bit of experience there just to see if we could come to any kind of common ground at all.
I don't want to appear ageist, but this
housing
was a major gathering of the old farts, so to speak.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, these people have a lot of experience, and, you know, all of them have to participate if there's going to be a solution.
Did the dreaded words rent control make an appearance?
Oh, yeah.
Aha.
And Mike Rotkin, support of it. And
now, wait a minute. Mike Rotkin has not supported rent control since 1982, when it failed in a city initiative, and every time anyone's brought it up since, he said, it failed three times, we can't do it again.
Well, he did support it the last time that Bob LaMonica had it going a couple of years ago. I remember he was on TV on Channel 3.
Oh, he did. Did he sign the petition?
I don't know if he signed the petition, but he came out in favor of it because I had written him a note back.
Uh-huh. So that's good. I noticed, however, that had he wanted to, he could have brought up the LaMonica initiative, which was only advisory anyway, at City Council, and that never happened. So maybe he was never asked to do so, but maybe, you know, as I would wonder, maybe we can hear from
Bob.
Well,
in any event,
yeah,
his name is kind of connected to it because
okay,
he was associated with it at some point.
20 years ago.
And some people seem to think it might be possible, and other, of course, realtors spoke up and, you know, tried the old theory that, you know, it may regulate the rents, but it decreases the supply of rental housing.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I got up.
All right.
And said that it would probably only work, rent control would probably only work if it was part of a larger plan, and we don't seem to have a general plan in the county or the city for housing, and I think it's up to the people in the community to decide what that's going to be and let the politicians know, and put them in a position to act on it once they know the will of the people.
Mm-hmm. How many people showed up at this conference?
I'd say there's about 50 people there.
How long did it last?
2 hours.
And was it recorded for those who weren't able to attend?
No, it wasn't. But I took notes.
But you did take notes, so you have some, if people want to know what happened, it's possible for, you want to tell us more about what went on at the conference?
Of course, the realtors all were hoping that in-law units would be a partial solution.
And you're talking about accessory dwelling units? ADUs, accessory dwelling units.
Is that what they're calling them now?
Little garage units. I guess those are, I guess in-law is one thing. What's your view on those ADUs?
Well, I think landlords should be certified and have to go through at least a couple-hour training class, just learning what their responsibilities are as a landlord and how the tenant is supposed to have quiet enjoyment of the property, and that the landlord is supposed to maintain the plumbing and the wiring and the phones and the locks and all those, you know, exactly know what their responsibilities are, because the biggest problem is landlords in those type of units preying on the tenants, especially when there's no place for the tenants to move.
Mm-hmm. How did you hear about this conference? A lot of us, I kind of heard about it secondhand from Mike Schmidt, and I heard it was mentioned in the Sentinel, but I never noticed it there. How did you...
It was on this, in the Sunday editorial column for a couple of Sundays.
Hmm.
And then I had written in right away, and I think Rent Control Santa Cruz and the Service Workers Union had, you know, were some of the first groups that wanted to have it. And I was really surprised that so many members.
Service Employees International Union?
Yeah, that there were so many organizations that mm-hmm. did show up.
Was any kind of consensus reached on the next step to take? Was another meeting planned?
Well, I think most of us wanted to have another meeting again, and they'll notify us.
This is a Sentinel.
They did have a couple of handouts since the letter I had written last August that they had put the top of the letters column suggested they find out what Santa Clara is doing and take an example from them.
Do you want to summarize what they are doing?
So they...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, they do have a coalition over there of mm-hmm. different organizations and nonprofits.
You know, finish though what you're saying and then tell me about Santa Clara.
So they
I'm sorry
have two
to interrupt
handouts, which, you know, I could give somebody a copy of if they are interested.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the main thrust of how this is supposed to work. But the good part of it is it does include the cause social equity, which I was very happy to see as part of it, since, you know, the rest of it is all profit-oriented capitalist.
Now, folks can call you at 426-0644
mm-hmm.
if they want to get the copies of these handouts or see them.
Or if they have ideas about what kind of housing plan we should come up with, because the editor invited all of us to... write a forum article that they said they would publish one every week throughout the rest of the year from all the different organizations involved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to kind of put our ideas on paper of how we think it should be here
mm-hmm.
and see, you know, what we can actually make work and happen.
Did the words homeless and or sleeping ban show up at this forum?
No.
How about the use of vehicles as housing?
No.
Okay.
We didn't have time to really, you know...
Single-room occupancy stuff about hotels?
Yeah.
That was that came up?
The El Centro was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was glad, because I know a tenant over there is being harassed and...
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us about...
Intimidated.
At the El Centro?
Yeah, well, they have floor managers there, and it sounds like, you know, they're really prying into people's lives and making a big issue over really small incidents.
Who runs El Centro?
Mercy
Housing.
Yeah.
This is the same group, of course, that's pushing for the Dolphin Lee Project. Have you been able to, have you kind of offered yourself as a sort of mediator between the tenants and Mercy, or are you just taking reports on it?
I haven't actually been a mediator in that particular situation. I was willing to help him write a letter, you know, with the Tenants' Rights Union name on it to
mm-hmm.
kind of make them back off.
What's the nature of the complaint he has or the pressure that...
Well, it's just that for small incidents, people are, you know, if they leave a... I guess it's a common kitchen area. If somebody leaves a mess out there, it's like, you're going to get evicted. You know, it's terrorism.
Mm-hmm. And is this part of their, like, rental contract?
Oh, I'm sure that wouldn't fit into the contract. It just seems like at least the individual floor managers aren't really educate on how to talk to people, and they don't understand.
What about, is this subsidized housing that they're in? Like, is it cheaper rent-controlled kind of housing, or which is, how would you describe it at El Centro?
Well, it is, I believe it is subsidized, and it is mostly for seniors and disabled
Grace.
People.
Hi.
Mm,
thank you.
We also mentioned, heard you mention Santa Clara. Now we've had Bob LaMonica on the show talking about the fact that they're organizing for just eviction laws and I guess some kind of rent control. Do you have any sense of what's going on over there?
I haven't seen any articles on that lately.
I know that in the Mercury News, Joe Gutierrez apparently has been writing regular columns about it, although I haven't been following it too closely. Bob LaMonica has, and for those who want to contact Bob, just give a call to 423-HUFF, and we'll put you in touch with him. I don't have his number with me conveniently at the moment. But what about the actual prospects of rent control? How sympathetic was this group to it? Was it mostly just sort of raised and then it fell, or is it likely to be come up again, or is anything being done around it?
Well, when I suggested that it be part of
the
plan, that kind of made the realtors, you know, back off from their all-or-nothing position.
What was their all-or-nothing position?
No, rent control, you know.
I see. So they're willing to include rent control in a plan?
It seems like it. You know, it's kind of hard to tell from such a brief meeting with some of the realtors, but...
Is there a subcommittee, like, that's meeting between times to actually designing a document, or... Not that you know of?
No, most of the people there, I think, had enough experience in groups that they're like, if we don't really accomplish something, we're not coming back. We don't want it to just be another meeting.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, did they accomplish something? What was your sense? Did something come out of that meeting?
Well, I think it was just good that all of the people were in the same room and had a voice. So, you know, it's not like you can exactly pass the buck, but you can actually see how...
Mm-hmm.
There's a lack of holistic understanding of the whole situation.
Uh-huh. Was anybody invited from San Jose, where there has been this new rent control movement in the last couple months?
Well, no, it was a county.
Huh, interesting.
Thing. In fact, one of the first people that spoke up was Emily Riley, who said, don't you think this should be a regional thing, which I didn't like that idea at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget the gentleman that spoke, but he said no, he was on a board of regional meetings, and in 7 years they hadn't accomplished one thing.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm afraid of is going to happen with the so-called Monday morning group town hall on homelessness that's being planned for June and sometime, or being talked about. What city council members from Santa Cruz actually showed up at this housing deal?
Emily Riley and Sugar.
And did either of them support rent control?
No.
Did either of them respond to anything you said or react to rent control?
Sugar seemed to react.
What, by twisting his head around and looking like his clothes were too tight? Or how did he react in a positive manner? Or?
Oh, he just seemed a bit startled.
Startled?
Yeah.
Caught in the headlights, huh? Deer in the headlights.
Well, you know, there was really only myself and one other gentleman with dreads that were not really of the middle class, that were more really on the front lines there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I got a chance to talk, I wanted the spirit of people to come through. I wasn't sitting there, you know, secondhand.
Right. Any students, or you say everybody was over 50, so
they
I guess...
They did have the guy from the university.
You mean one of the people that's destroying housing, one of the bureaucrats, or...
Well, he said they're, you know, providing 70% of housing, they're going to do this and they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Michael Schmidt was there?
Yes.
Did he say anything that you thought was noteworthy? I know he's running now for Board of Supervisors, and some of us are concerned that this is going to change his previously... independent stance on homelessness and other issues.
Huh.
We don't know that that's necessarily going to happen, but that's my fear anyway.
I really can't sort out, you know, all the voices.
Uh-huh. How can people help TRUSC, Tenants Rights Union of Santa Cruz? I mean, apparently it sounds like you don't have the resources these days or the advance notice to be able to give the kind of help of an unlawful detainer as you used to, or am I wrong about that?
Well, I don't know if they've ever lifted the 60-day ban, and if I was going to go and do the Unlawful Detainer Project, I definitely need at least two other people to do it full-time.
You're looking for people to do that?
Well, if somebody wants to do it, I would support whatever they want to do, whatever project they want to do for tenants.
And
I would support.
Well, I know there's this big brouhaha, this rent rage against rent rally coming up in early April. You've heard about that?
No.
That's a scan production, God help us. I think it's coming up in the next few days. It may even be the third, day after tomorrow. Maybe my producer can give a quick call in the last 10 minutes of our show here. We're talking to Donna Dice Marocchi, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz activist at 426-0644. That's the number of TRUSC for those of you who would like to contact her after the show off the air. There's a Rage Against Rent thing happening. I know the tenants at 204 Riverside have become a great poster child for the city council and for Tim Fitzmaurice, who continues to push for the acquisition of the Dolphin and Lee apartments in a project that I've repeatedly claimed and I believe accurately will produce less housing than is currently there and result in $12.5 million expenditure of all affordable housing money for the next 5 years. In a project primarily that's a Mercy Charities housing baby and essentially supports that group as a sole source provider, developer, builder, and eventual owner. But nonetheless, I'm always glad to see people, tenants in numbers, showing up at City Council talking about rents.
I encourage all tenants that are having a problem with their landlord or having to move or they have to live in substandard housing that they think would be in code violations. They should contact either the city or the county and let them know the kind of problems they're having as a tenant.
You might also, go ahead.
Now is probably the best time to do that because I really think, you know, since this housing shortage has affected just about everybody, at least as far as, you know, relatively well-off people's children not being able to live here, it has become a middle-class thing and it is the best time.
Right.
To speak up. I had a tenant call the editor of the Sentinel, and he was actually, you know, wanting to do an article on his situation. I thought, well, that hasn't happened before. So, you know, you got to look on the positive side as well as the facts and people the chance to express themselves instead of living in fear.
That's correct. Well, I want to thank you, Donna, for giving us a call and for giving us this update. Is there any more you want to say before we dash off to the last 6 minutes of the show?
Oh, I can't think what else to say.
Well, you said a lot, and you can certainly say more on Thursday if you're in between 6 and 8 when this show returns in the evening. So think about that. In the meantime, people can give you a call at 426-0644, TRUSC, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and if you have any ideas for how to come up with a housing plan that would really work, let's put them on paper and figure out what we can do, because I want to write that article for the Sentinel pretty soon.
There you go.
So I want to include as much in there as possible.
Thank you, Donna.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we've got only a few minutes left of the show. We're going to run through a couple things quickly. Maybe I can get a call from my producer if she's listening about this rent rage date, and I think it's either coming up in the next couple of days or in the next week or so. There's a city council meeting on Tuesday, which is one of these so-called special meetings. And this special meeting involves, as I scramble to find the pages that I hope are in here, and here they are. Or are they? No. Still scrambling. It's Stormwater Fund, 3-year CIP, Capital Improvement Program, and mid-year budget review discussions. That sounds very boring, and it's at 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, and there's no oral communications, but you can speak on agenda items. And frankly, proposed 3-year Capital Improvement Program, that's a lot of money being spent in buildings, and some of those buildings could be things like shelters. They could be affordable housing. They could be a campground for low-income people. And frankly, I don't think much of them is going to be in those categories, and maybe folks should show up and demand that they should be in those categories. Maybe you can call Dear Christopher Crone, the
the liberal darling who no longer holds public meetings on Monday so that we can know what's going on the city council agenda, and ask him to resume those meetings as a city council member so that people can actually have some access to city council offices. It would be also nice if the three Coffee Klatch members weren't barred from the council offices, and so we could actually have the same citizenship of other people, but we've discussed that before. There are three items on the agenda on the 4 o'clock session of City Council: the Stormwater Fund Special Report, informational update, no action; a proposed three-year capital improvement program, informational update and public comment, no action; and the mid-year budget review and preliminary future revenue outlook, no action, but finance staff will present a report and public can talk. And what that means is you can talk about how much money should go into the police department and the parks and rec. Should they be spending over half of the city budget on those issues? Well, come down and tell them. Tell them loudly, tell them strongly, and there isn't much time to organize mass protests at these meetings. But you can speak at them, and they do go on tape, and they are recorded, and they may be televised as well. I can't guarantee that these special meetings are being televised, but often they are. They're also on the web if you want to read the documents that are involved here. And there's not really much to read, but you can also get a copy from the city clerk's office of the April 3rd special meeting agenda of the city council. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert. It looks like I'm going to have to apologize to Musical Merlin, who generously donated a record of The Temptations for me to play a song. Hopefully next time on Thursday, sometime between 6 and 8, you'll be able to hear the sounds of Ball of Confusion rolling at you from The Temptations, as well as my usual familiar chanties that accompany Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides, the Civil Rights Show, which airs twice a week, Sundays at 11 and Thursdays at 6 in the evening. So I'm still waiting to see if the next talk show host shows up, and if she does, be happy to yield to her. If not, I'm going to continue for a bit until I hear what's going on. A couple of articles which might interest folks out there. As far as homeless meetings go, I have not heard that the Monday morning group is meeting on Monday morning anymore, because they want to make sure that unhealthy influences like myself don't show up. And I have no idea whether I would show up at such a meeting where I'm really, really not wanted, and not much is actually being talked about getting done other than this town meeting, so I'm not sure that that is a necessary precaution. But for those of you who are interested in the Monday morning meeting, you should give a contact to Michael, call to Michael Schmidt, who really seems to be taking a leading role in this whole business. And if you want his number, give a call to 423-HUFF, and I'll pass it on to you. I don't have it with me right here. He's not acting in his capacity as CEO of the Chamber of Commerce or supervisorial candidate. He is presumably acting in his capacity as opponent of the sleeping ban, which he has, as an individual, opposed for almost a year now. In fact, I think it's more than a year now, after the city council rejected any action on safe sleeping zones. I should say safe sleeping places was how it was originally proposed by him, and then subsequently on safe sleeping zones. So he is he has been outspoken, and I think quite courageous on this issue. I think he's making some mistakes now. Part of that maybe have to do with the supervisorial race. Part of that may have to do with the fact that he has had success in Albuquerque when he was there in New Mexico, using a town meeting process to get things going, and he hopes that it can be done here. I hope he's right. I think he's probably wrong, and I think that what's needed instead is mobilization of the community and focus on the sleeping ban issue, not diluting things into general concerns about homelessness and trying to bring in the region or the county even on this issue, although, you know, nothing wrong with going to the county, but this is a city ordinance, and it's a city situation, really. And the city can take a major action on it. And all this seems to me to be an attempt to get the city council to do something, if only we can persuade them, oh, pretty, pretty, please, and that's just not going to work, in my view. But find out about the situation by contacting Michael Schmidt, and get that number by calling HUFF, 423-4833. And you can get that number and other numbers, actually a bunch of other numbers, on any subject you would happen to name around homelessness by giving a call. HUFF was going to have a meeting today in San Lorenzo Park at 3. That probably will not be happening, but we all will be planning a meeting in the near future to look at alternatives to the current do-nothing situation. And I think that that's really a very vital part of taking some action around this stuff. In the meantime, witness what goes on the streets. I continue to say this, and I can't emphasize it heavily enough. Police are deterred from abusive behavior by many eyes and voices raised watching. I don't mean disruptive screams. I don't mean obstructing an arrest. I don't mean interfering. I mean calling people over and commenting to the people around about the use of taxpayer dollars, expressing solidarity to the people who are being harassed for jaywalking tickets or bike tickets or sitting on the sidewalk tickets or chalking on the sidewalk tickets or what have you, marijuana tickets, I don't care. This is all bullshit. This is abusive use of police state kind of stuff, often used selectively against young people and homeless people, and it has to stop. And frankly, gentle delegations to the mayor don't think are going to stop it. It's got to be us on the streets that raises the issue in a strong, forthright manner. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Steve Argue again.
Not again?
I've got a meeting to announce.
Oh, good.
4 o'clock today.
Uh-huh.
At the Roasting Company.
And what kind of a meeting is that?
We're going to meet about organizing a demonstration to end the sleeping ban and for rent control.
Wow. And is there a number people can call if they can't make it to that meeting but they want to support you?
457-9754, extension 1169.
457-9754, extension 1169 for information on how to support the sleeping ban / rent control repeal rent control movement. And also, you're going to be at the Coffee Roasting Company on Pacific Avenue today at 4?
At 4.
Will you be providing free coffee?
I won't be able to do that.
Well, then bring your own coffee cup, and maybe we can all share water together. I'll probably see you there.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Well, that's on-air organizing, folks. That somehow he needs to mobilize massive community support, or it would not pass if he put it on the agenda. I'm quite sure it would pass, and it wouldn't be hard to frame it in the kinds, given all the work we've done in the last 2 years on finding the right wording, it'd be really relatively easy to put something on the agenda. It's just lack of will that's happening, or I should say determination not to, because that really has to be what it is. And the fact that Fitzmaurice doesn't like me personally, or does like me personally, who knows how he feels about me personally, and who cares? It's the issue that he is refusing to address, and that is what we, the Green Party, the Peace and Freedom Party, SCAN, all these groups, insofar as they're concerned about dealing with the issue, have to go to the mat with him on. And hopefully that's going to happen. So here's a email I got from David Bush, who's a member of Side by Side. That's not George W. Bush's cousin. No, no. This is an activist in Santa Monica who's stands for things that are diametrically opposed to the national Bush guy. He's a member of Making Change, the homeless newspaper LA, and he's concerned about a Santa Monica anti-poor ordinance. And he writes the following. This is to ask to help all LA area poor people, ask you to help all LA area poor people by taking a public stand against a terrible new ordinance proposed by the police department of wealthy, trendy Santa Monica. It will be voted on April 24, 2001. This proposed ordinance is a dangerous abuse with regional implications. Shockingly, its city council now seems ready to go along with some version of it. We need your help to distribute it. Santa Monica is now proposing an ordinance to criminalize any person found living in a vehicle within their city limits. I'm going to interrupt for a minute. This was proposed at night by Fitzmaurice back in the summer of last year. While he proposed making it legal for people to sleep on the sidewalk, for a moment, he actually proposed it before he had it tabled and ended the whole thing. He was proposing that be put on the ballot as an advisory initiative. He also proposed, as part of that advisory initiative, that being in a vehicle at night parked in a public space be considered a crime. Not just sleeping in a vehicle, but being in a vehicle. He would have made the sleeping ban for people in vehicles worse. And, of course, when we proposed changes, activists ranging from Sherry Connable to I think David Silva signed on to this. I could be wrong. A bunch of people at that time, the whole homeless working group of Michael Schmidt and others, said, no, no, we want to have, you know, it has to be legal to sleep in vehicles on public streets, provided no other crimes are being committed, and it can't just be an advisory initiative. Fitzmaurice tabled it instead of allowing it to go to the ballot. He had the votes to have that on the ballot. It was tabled and destroyed and dumped and buried. And now in Santa Monica, some nasty ordinance is coming up. Let's read some more about it. Santa Monica is now proposing an ordinance to criminalize any person found living in a vehicle within their city limits. This city has slightly over 88, 1,000 residents and 1,100 homeless people, including by police admission a minuscule 50 to 70 poor people now living in the streets on vehicles and RVs. Privileged beachside Santa Monica now states that they will provide no place within city limits for any poor person now forced to live in a vehicle. Some of these people in vehicles have lived here unobtrusively for over a decade or more, yet the city has made absolutely no effort to organize them for self-help. Police further admit as well that only a small minority present a problem, mostly for dumping, for which laws already exist and should be better enforced. But beyond that, the major complaint against these poor people is this liberal-reputed community's, quote, unease. Disgustingly, Los Angeles is now widely known as the poverty capital of the nation, with 50 to 80,000 L.A. County people now literally homeless and sleeping on L.A. streets, alleys, sidewalks, and in their vehicles, and with public officials everywhere obstinately giving them no legal place to go, not even an open field, should every community now pass such an ordinance against growing numbers of people who are simply too poor for housing in the greatest economy on earth? Should Santa Monica? In typical urban centers, 3% of Americans are now homeless. Clearly, wealthy Santa Monica, with only 1.25% of its homeless its residents homeless, despite continued widespread public misrepresentation on this issue, is in no way forced or faced with any regionally unfair burden of the homeless or of the present-day plight or choices of these 50 to 70 people. It is faced with a burden of denial, blindness, and greed against the face-to-face realities of poor people and anti-poor bigotry and a refusal to give these residents a home. What an example. The fact is, this nationally reputed and globally known playground for the rich and pampered yuppies is out on a path to cleanse its streets for the wealthy. We are asking you to sign and send us facts and oppose the lies and anti-poverty bigotry of Santa Monica before it spreads. The city council so far has only voted to delay the ordinance. Three council members have spoken in vague terms to oppose it, but it takes four straight, honest votes to defeat it. Poor people need places to go if politicians simply can't do their duty. We support self-help, fairness, and a community for homeless people. We know that we possess the ability to work together to end poverty and should be doing so. We support low-income and affordable housing and homes for those in poverty. We ask you to agree and send this fax before April 24, 2001, when the Santa Monica City Council will vote on this proposal. They clearly ought to support homeless organizing and self-help instead. Why don't they? They have the resources. They have the answers. Some of them may need the backbone. Thanks, David Bush, member Side by Side, worldatpeace@hotmail.com. World at Peace is all one word. And then there's a fax, which they recommend you fax and sign on to. Did you know that Santa Monica is getting ready to pass a law against poor community residents living in vehicles? Where would you go if you were homeless and had to spend the night in your car? On January 23, 2001, the Santa Monica Police Department proposed to the City Council a new law for Santa Monica, again the police department, just like in Santa Cruz, proposed the current ordinance, which would criminalize any poor individual who is forced to live overnight in a vehicle. Currently, there are laws requiring all vehicles on the street be regularly moved. Other laws limit the size of vehicles parked on the street, and other laws already criminalize dumping, littering, and disorderly conduct. Police admit that in all of Santa Monica, only 50 to 70 people may be found at a time living in a vehicle, and of those, only a small handful are a problem, mostly due to dumping. Other complaints are about vague unease or complaints that the small community vehicles are somehow taking their parking spaces. So why are the police pursuing this? Given the small numbers of problems these poor and homeless people in vehicles actually create, this effort seems more like a lack of understanding the needs of poor people, and it is a law that would simply be one more handmade tool for the greedy and intolerant to turn Santa Monica into just another rich playground. Will this community's religious leaders publicly support an RV park for the poor or oppose this ordinance? Help us contact and support the vehicularly housed. If you are a community leader or just a concerned person, we oppose this ordinance and also support the creation of a small RV homeless park Side by Side. We'll meet at the Santa Monica Ken Edwards Community Center at 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 4th. We'll plan speakers and speaking out, and we want you to fax the city manager. And again, you can get the number if you want to do some faxing or emailing at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And it looks like that the people they're suggesting you email include Green Party member Michael Feinstein. Again, a Green Party person, elected politician in a city who apparently needs some persuading to restore or retain the rights of homeless people. Does this sound familiar? You know, it's interesting. I received an email from Arcata and Eureka. A guy named Ruben Batillo does a homeless news service. He's pretty outspoken. He's got some pretty harsh words for people he describes as poverty pimps that I'm somewhat more sympathetic to, though I've used that term too, not as frequently or as harshly as he has. When he heard the local Green Party was harassing Becky Johnson, myself, and Bernard, when he heard that they weren't taking action on the sleeping ban, he exploded and denounced the Green Party by saying that up there in Arcata, where they actually had a majority of people who were Green Party people on the city council, they did nothing while the South Spit jetty was emptied of homeless people 3 years ago in a bogus health scare, which I documented in Street Spirit in two long articles. And it's just amazing how people will flock groupie fashion to support politicians, regardless of the facts, if they're part of a particular party, like the Green Party, that they're a part of. And I really encourage people to go for the specific facts. Find out what's really happening before you sign on to these politicians' campaigns, or are sucked in with such statements that, oh, we are a Green Party and we don't criticize harshly our officials because we're all one big family. It depends on whether the father is beating up the kids, folks. It depends on whether the father is kicking the homeless down the road, whether you want to support the dad in these behaviors. And you can try gentle intervention, but eventually you may have to call the cops to stop the bully who's the political bully, or who is maintaining this status of harassing homeless people, whether it's Fitzmaurice or Feinstein or folks up in Arcata who are Green Party majority members. It doesn't matter what the word is in front of their city council designation. It matters what they do and what they don't do. And if you find that when you raise your voice on this issue, you're declared a pariah, you're shunned, you're kicked out of groups, it seems to me the clear message is that the groups don't want to hear that message. The groups don't want to hear any criticism of their elected officials. The groups don't want you to raise the issue in a fashion that might embarrass the officials or embarrass you. I'm embarrass them, the groups that have been supporting these officials year after year or maintaining a silence on their bad behavior. So that really, you know, to say it again is, of course, simply to belabor the obvious, and that's the reality of it. And maybe this meeting at 4 o'clock is Steve Argue would be a good thing for folks to go to. I think I'm certainly going to look in on it and see what's cooking there. Here's another story from the Seattle Times, from a newspaper, March 29th. Seattle and Portland both have tent cities, healthy tent cities that have been moving from place to place. Portland, as you may remember, in Oregon, eliminated its whole camping ordinance through a court decision by a Judge Gallagher. Austin, Texas has also eliminated the sleeping sections of its camping ordinance. We're having trouble finding out more information about them. But Seattle has a law against sleeping, but they've been moving from place to place, I think for the last year, with a tent city. I'm going to read about what's been cooking up there. A tent city resident fights December chill at El Centro de la Raza. The encampment moved after the first of the year. Stop nomadic journey of the area's homeless. Editorial and opinion guest columnist in the Seattle Times, Mel S. Jackson. For the past year, a changing group of some 100 homeless men and women have wandered from Tukwila to Ballard in search of a place to call home. Setting up camp in the parking lots of welcoming churches and service organizations, Tent City residents settle in until a neighbor lodges a complaint and they are forced to move again. Their routine is born of personal desperation and Seattle's unwillingness to make a risky decision politically. It's time to make that decision. Tent City should be granted a temporary permit to operate on property owned by the city or donated by a corporation or service organization. The city has done a tremendous job in the past 6 years by doubling funding for shelter space, transitional housing, and health care for the homeless. Private charity has stepped up to the plate and is spending $40 million to build transitional housing in the surrounding counties. Nevertheless, an estimated 2,000 people sleep outside each night. Men, women, and children bed down behind billboards, under bridges, and in alleys. Many of the children are out of reach of these agencies, of those agencies charged with their well-being and protection. The sick and disabled and recently arrived are unaware of the support services available to them. Tent City has provided many of these men and women some semblance of community and safety. The outdoor quarters, where behavior is strictly monitored, offer temporary homeless residents a safe place for their belongings while they're at work, and provides shelter during the day for those who work the night shift. Toilet and hand-washing facilities are set up, and chores delegated to residents. In addition to legalizing the homeless camp, the city should set operating and security standards and ensure that city services such as fire protection and support for those with special needs are made available. Its boundaries should be well-defined and pleasant to both residents and neighbors. Tents should be of uniform sizes and accommodating to marital and family needs. The Seattle Housing and Resource Effort, SHARE, and the Women's Housing Equality and Enhancement League, WEEL, which currently operate Tent City, could be looked to for their management expertise. Their policy of camp monitors, guest and resident sign-in, and emphasis on a sober, nonviolent community has garnered significant support for a permanent settlement from city residents in the past. After a period of time, perhaps 3 or 6 months, a committee comprised of neighbors of the site, representatives of city agencies, service providers, and residents of the camp could then evaluate Tent City to determine its future. Homelessness is a tough issue, and many of our citizens have grown weary of its seemingly relentless public face. But the solution will not be found in pretending that everything has been done that can be done to lift these women and men up over the personal, social, and economic barriers they confront. Until the supply of affordable housing meets demand, we need to acknowledge Tent City as a viable option for homeless men and women in need of temporary shelter. It is by no means a permanent solution. Just as the Millionaire Club offers day labor job services to the homeless for a set period of time in order to encourage a move to full-time work, Tent City should aim for a high turnover of residents to move on to more stable conditions. It should be seen as an entry point on a continuum of care. Mel Jackson is executive director of the Millionaire Club charity, which has provided jobs, meals, and direct temporary support to those in need since 1921. Now, this is interesting. See, if the Monday Morning Group are actually working on a Tent City for this town, very specifically the way this guy Jackson and his Millionaire Club charity group, as it's called, a millionaire is spelled millionaire without an E, so I think it's a little different than millionaire, like it's million in the open air, millionaire, perhaps. If the Monday Morning Group were actually working to set up a Tent City, and they said, Robert, we think you should not be a part of this group because City Council doesn't want to negotiate with you and they're prepared to negotiate on this issue, I would have no problem probably just saying, go for it, you know. I mean, you know, I helped you guys set up the group because that indeed did happen, but, you know, I don't have to be, you know, in the front lines, because they would already have the momentum to move forward on the issue and the clear vision. But unfortunately, all the Monday Morning Group is talking about doing is more talking. And they're talking not just about talking about the sleeping ban, which I think is might be pertinent if you're able to drag the city council into a discussion, but they're going to talk about everything under the sun around the homeless. And it's a sad situation. I bring it up again because, not because I'm trying to discredit this group or other groups, because I think there has to be a focus on real issues, and I think people have to get back to real issues. So I hope that begins to happen. Well, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, in case you were wondering what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, going into my, 20 minutes into the next show, and haven't heard from the little red hen. She's, of course, welcome to call in, and we can try to scrounge up one of her tapes and put them on, so that can proceed. I haven't, it's always problematic finding it, but, and I may just put on a tape myself, because I may have to take off shortly. But I think what I'm going to do is play something else, which first here's an interview, another one of the street interviews that I think is very important because it actually puts the voices of people out on the streets over the air. And you may see a lot of folks out there on the streets, and you may talk to a few of them, but you can't really know what's going on unless you talk to people in detail. Hence the following.
Sloth.
And Sloth, you were a man of, displaying crystals?
I had crystals going at the market, like vending some crystals.
And what happened?
Like 3 or 4 feet away from where I was sitting with my rocks, some cops were walking by, and there was a kid there who, I guess, like, turned from them and walked away from where they were at. And from what, I don't know, I can't say on what I've heard, so I'd only say on what I saw,
right,
that from there, I mean, they just, like, jumped on him, like, tackled him hardcore.
You saw them jump on this kid?
Well, here's the thing, I mean, I don't know really what they were after him for that would have caused them to want to go that way. All I know is, for sure, it was unnecessary.
How many police officers involved?
There were 2 police officers at the time.
And how far away were from you were they?
A few feet, you know.
And
was this fellow sitting when the police, was he sitting or standing?
I think he was standing.
He was standing?
I don't know in what position he was, because what I saw was them, like, basically run over all of our stuff that was out there. And again, for all I know, like, for all I know, they're after him for murder.
Which officers were these? Another name?
No, but the badge numbers were taken down by a few other people that were beginning to file a report. So 182 might be a badge number.
Tell me the story of what happened. Whether you saw it or not. What is your understanding?
My understanding is that they really reacted very, very physically to somebody.
Yeah, so they took
nearby. I'm not sure.
They pursued this guy. And within
4 feet of like where I was, like they moved from where they were at about 4 feet and grabbed him, which is only a few feet away.
Did you see them grab him or not?
I turned as they were moving by me and saw them trampling our stuff. Like one or two steps is when they like tackled this kid and like bam, took him to the ground and like it was.
And then what happened?
Very physical.
I'll be very specific. What did they do when they took him to the ground?
Well, I'm not sure what they did, but he was pretty beat up, you know, and I saw, like, felt the energy and saw the action next to me.
Did you see any of them strike the kid?
No, I didn't see him strike him, but I saw the bodies, like, move and the tackle. I felt the energy of the whole thing happen. I turned and saw the kid was really scraped up.
What did you do then?
Well, I just stood up and watched what happened, you know, watched a lot of kids that were upset about basically the energy, you know, the disturbance and just having... like them just come over all of our stuff like that, you know, we were all shaken up and like everybody just kind of stood up and like, what's going on? And
what did the police officers say?
They didn't say anything. They were like they ignored what we were saying and they smiled at us and like, and then when they were taking it away, one of the officers just turned to us and like smiled and nodded, you know, and we were saying like, what you're doing is the way you did it was wrong, not necessarily, we don't know what you're after this kid about, but the, yeah, I mean like, they're, I mean,
what, the stuff that they trampled, your crystals?
Yeah.
How much was that worth?
A couple hundred dollars. Like, I know one crystal that broke and some jewelry that kind of, like, beat up and dented up.
Did you ask to hold the officers accountable? Did you say, you just broke my crystals, can you please?
There was some other people that had crystals out. I had mine off a little bit off
to
the side.
Did police come back later, either their superiors or other police officers?
Yeah, they came back and looked at the scene, and a few people, like, were starting to, like, talk to them. They were kind of about more just a senior officer was there with another officer saying, is this where it went down? Is that what happened? They got to look at the scene.
Was
and
any volunteering
away.
Done to replace the crystals or do anything with the property?
Not that I heard, but one of the people said that they were filing a report and that it might get taken care of. That's
so it wasn't your crystals that were destroyed?
Not mine, no.
No, yes.
Yeah.
So after...
Ironically, there was a piece of tourmaline that was mine that I had...
Is there a...
Or broken.
You saw them taken down to the ground. Then what happened? Did the kid say anything?
He was quiet. He was really quiet. He got up and said that, did you see that? That officer hit me? Like,
he said that?
Yeah, he said that
and
right
exactly
away.
Exactly what did you hear him say again?
I said, did you see that? That officer hit me. And his eye was like, it looked like he got hit.
Which
I'm not sure if that would happen from him getting tackled. Because to me, what I felt was out of my peripheral vision was the kid was really like tackled and like held down or
so
something
like
that.
You didn't see a blow and you didn't think a blow necessarily happened, huh?
Dude, all I know it was very physical, that
big,
I know.
How big was this kid that they took down?
He was, like, I'd say maybe 5'2", something
like
that.
Very short?
Yeah, pretty short kid.
Shorter than me.
How much did he weigh?
He might weigh 160.
And there were how many cops?
Two cops.
And how big were they?
Oh, they were big guys. Those were like 200 pounds. They were my size.
One of those was the police officer here, right? Did you see the two cops here today?
Yeah, I think that was the guy that came back with the senior officer.
Oh, so he wasn't the guy who did the tackling?
Oh, no, I just remember him from being... I don't really recall if it was the same guy who was...
Because we heard from the other fellow who was here earlier from...
I don't recall who the first...
His name was Gunther, and
they got their numbers, though.
And he was the guy who got
people
the tackling.
Got
I don't have their numbers.
Their numbers.
I just got this report. Let's see him here.
You know,
so what happened afterward?
Afterwards, like, it's a lot of, all of us kids were talking about, hey, number one, there's a time and a place to make a stand and to make a fight, and it was like, we were basically dwelling, like, why are we still all uptight about this and yelling about this now? After it happened, we were trying to figure out, like,
so a lot
of us felt like it was wrong and we didn't know what to do about it.
So the police quickly left after the whole incident.
Oh, yeah, and they came back and they weren't really about stopping to talk to us and take statements either, because I told them I was a witness, another guy said that we were a witness, and they just came and got a glimpse of the scene and they
walked
away.
Your name again is?
I go by Sloth.
Sloth.
Yeah,
okay.
That's my travel name, my turn name.
Got a voicemail message? Got a voicemail message?
A voicemail message?
I mean, can you be reached by phone?
Not right now, I don't.
Anything you want to add to this?
Just that, I don't know, Like police energy is like bothering me in a lot of places. Like I'm a Christian. I walk very much, you know, I follow the God's laws, the laws of loving one another, and I still find myself clashing in a lot of places with police. Then it seems like that they need to somehow justify their jobs, you know, looking for things that people do wrong. I guess this was, I've heard this is regarding like a dog ticket, having a dog in the wrong place, and maybe a traffic ticket or something like that.
Where did you hear that from?
From people, from my friends that knew him, that said that they were like, it was pretty insignificant type tickets that he hadn't taken care of and therefore wanted to avoid the police because he just didn't want to have the encounter with him.
The name of the man was?
I don't know the name.
I guess Brian.
Brian, yeah, it's Brian.
Thank you.
And equipment seems to be a little problematic. I'm going to keep working on it here. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, the extended edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Phone in line is open in case you want to be a part of this, 427-3772. You want to talk off air, 423-4833. I did actually interview a woman on the street who's actually a lawyer. She's a member of the bar. I think her bar credential is inactive. She was homeless for a year. She's currently in a drug recovery program, and she may be with us actually at the coffee roasting company at 4 o'clock, perhaps to provide some legal perspective on the situation. She's not sure she can make it in, but that's one prospect for those of you who are thinking of joining Steve Argue and myself at the coffee roasting company to see what can be done around the infamous sleeping ban in a more activist sort of way. I've always felt that you really need to get a bunch of activists who want to commit a certain number of hours a week to this before you even start. But hey, I don't mind meeting and talking some more about it. I seem to love talking about this subject, so I guess I'll be talking about it till the cows come home. Here's another street interview, and see what you think of this.
We're talking to a man on the street. Your name is?
My name is Dragon. I just had a little run-in with the police not too long ago.
Today?
Not yes, today. I came to find out that it is against the law to lay down on the sidewalk. I was disheartened by that because I was in a really comfortable position, jamming on my drum, and the guy was just a real...
sick kid?
Well, he had, let's just say, he could have told me in a kinder way than he did. So, I was a little upset about that. And you know what? I know it's not his fault, but it is a ridiculous law. I mean, some kids just get tired and they just want to, you know, relax. I mean, can we lay down on the benches? Or is it just the concrete? Because, I mean, if it's about sanitation, if it's about, you know...
Well, it's not about any of that. It's all about getting rid of people they don't want on downtown.
It's about image, right?
There is a law specifically that forbids lying down on the sidewalk.
Why do people have this connotation of comfort in public, you know, being, like negative? I don't get it. You know, they should put up little, like, cushy benches, you know? And have, like, I don't know, cup holders and...
How long ago were you given this warning?
It was about an hour and a half ago.
Where were you lying?
I was lying right there by that bench.
I knew whenever I came by and they were going in front of me, I almost said, well, here comes the police. Because you were on your back and I knew what the law was here.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know and I was treated... I didn't know and he treated me like I should have known.
Who was the cop?
He was a tall black British man.
That's RoboCop Officer Perry. Yeah, I recognize him. Well, no, it's one of the downtown ordinances that makes it illegal, for example, to ask for spare change peacefully after dark. Makes it illegal to ask for spare change from a seated position. Makes it illegal to ask for spare change in a group of two. It's all designed to
keep from asking for spare change.
Well, unless, of course, you're at the businesses, in which case you can ask for spare $10 bills.
I don't want any change. I just wanted to relax.
No, you're not supposed to relax. Just keep walking and throw your money into the stores, as is appropriate.
Well, parks.
There is a park a couple of blocks away, but...
Across the river.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what they would say. That's...
But it's obviously ludicrous to have a don't lie down ordinance. They have a don't blocking the sidewalk ordinance, which is reasonable, but...
say that in San Diego on the beaches they have fire pits, and it's okay to be there 24 hours a day, but you can't sleep there.
You're not, you're
are
not
you from San Diego?
No, but I was there and
saw. How long were you there for?
For a few weeks, yeah.
Are you a traveling man? Have you been down long?
Yeah, I've been traveling for about 2 years. So I've been here like on and off a couple times over those 2 years for like about a week, and then I've been here for about a month.
Any hassles for camping or sleeping?
Hey, this is one of the best places in the country, like, where people are getting in a little bit more about land ownership and are willing to, like when there's open spaces, to let people be able to, like, put a little camp together and stay, you know. There's a lot of people here that are on religion.
No tickets, no hassles by police?
I haven't, but I know people that have gotten tickets for camping, you know.
Recently?
Recently, not like Santa Barbara area, not really
Tennessee. Not in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I hang out in Davenport. Davenport's a wonderful place.
Any hassles in Davenport for Santa?
No, Davenport, you're allowed to camp on the beach. There's plenty of space, and people really are, the people that stay there clean up the place. And we're so happy that, you know, there's a place that, there's a big amount of space and a big, a lot of wonderful land, and you know, you can just take out a sleeping bag and go stay under the stars. Yeah.
Okay, it's about 3:35, and we're talking to
James Aylward.
James, we're here at New Leaf Market, or in front of New Leaf, with two police officers, one of them illegally leaning on a building, but we won't get into that. That's Officer RoboCop Perry. What happened to you regarding a sleeping incident, I think you mentioned to me?
Well, I was awoken in the morning around 8:45 by two downtown hosts who, upon awakening, issued me a citation for sleeping in a restricted area.
Now, where were you? Where did they awaken you?
I don't know, over there somewhere.
Like, were you?
I was in a back alley behind an unused building.
And these were hosts, not cops?
Yeah, they were hosts.
And they wrote you a ticket?
Yes, sir.
And what day was this?
I don't know. They're gonna refer to my ticket.
He's gonna check his records here, folks. Digging into his, the fatal yellow ticket comes out. Let's have a look at this. This is, boy, you're from Simi Valley. I guess there's no place like home. Sleeping in area prohibited. 6.26.90A. Sleeping in a prohibited area. Rear of the Del Mar. And it's badge number 437. You know, are you sure this wasn't a police officer and not a host? Did it have blue on? Or
I think he was a host. That is it.
Hosts are not supposed to be issuing tickets. So just these guys in blue.
Must have been an officer, yeah. You've convinced me.
Dated the
it was like 4 days.
January 31st at 8:46. I'm not sure what they mean by prohibited area. If I were you, I would challenge this ticket. I would go to court.
Yeah, I'm going
to
tell them that I was not sleeping. I was blinking. A cop walked up while I was blinking, and then I opened my eyes and looked at him, and I was like, ah.
Checking your eyelids for holes.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was checking eyelid maintenance.
Okay, we're here at Coffee Concepts with John Earth, Patty Long, and
Kelly Ryan,
who is the woman in the camper, and of course the focus of all our attentions here. So, tell me, how long have you been causing trouble in Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz for about a month.
And you are living in your vehicle illegally?
No, very legally.
Oh, how is that?
Well, I bought the camper 4 months ago in Wisconsin. It's my boyfriend, and upon graduating from college, decided to take a long road trip for about 8 months.
Alone?
Nope. My dog, my boyfriend, and myself.
So much for my plan.
and so we're staying in Santa Cruz on Pleasure Point with some friends in their yard.
In their yard. So you are legally parked.
We're legal.
I was looking for some terror stories, and there's
No, we're so wholesome.
But I know you don't have your dog on the mall, thank God. Otherwise, it could be a cause for arrest. You know.
I've been taking the bus around, so I can't take the dog with me because he's too big. But it's nice living here in Santa Cruz. It's beautiful. I think it'll be hard to leave when
what
we actually
like
decide to leave. I like that. Well, I'm from Minnesota, and right now we wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah,
we'd be freezing our asses off.
Yeah.
Can I say that on the radio?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So, I like the weather. I like that I walked along the beach for like 2 hours this morning, and I can hear the beach from where we're parked. I love that. And the people are very nice. I can take the bus anywhere I want to go. I got a job the second day I got here.
What kind of work are you doing?
I work at Eric's Deli and Cafe.
Shocking. Which one?
The one on Capitola, 41st and Capitola. It's pretty. You should come in and get a sandwich in time from me.
I sometimes eat over here.
Yeah.
That's the Eric's Deli Cafe.
So, what do you all do? What
so
are you doing?
Patty here is a homeless advocate. He's been trying to help people out on the streets for two decades. And what's happening with that, Patty?
Well, I think we got to focus again on getting rid of the sleeping ban, which, if you don't know, means you can't sleep from about 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. in a vehicle, a car, or put a blanket around you outside, or put a tent up anywhere within the city limits. And if you do, you get cited. You get a ticket. I think it's $60 now, or $54.
$270 if you don't pay it.
And it criminalizes the homeless without them committing any crime. Totally unconstitutional.
The only exceptions are if you're parked on somebody's property in a backyard,
mm-hmm.
And of course if there's no complaint from anybody else, because then they'll use zoning laws to get rid of you. Or if you go for 3 days in somebody's driveway per month.
Really?
So for the other 27 days, it's get out of town or move to another driveway.
Ah.
So actually what you do is, like, I have two homeless people staying with me in an old beat-up RV. I mean, they can stay there, you know, as long forever as far as I'm concerned. To hell with the city regulations. It's immoral what they're doing. Okay.
I had no idea that there were those sort of laws. I thought that you could sleep. I mean,
yeah,
it's your own car. You can.
Right. It's not all love and kisses in Santa Cruz.
We also have at the table John Earth. John, you were for many number of years a co-worker with Feed the People, which actually fed near this very spot. And you've recently been able to. Feed the People has not been resuscitated, but you've gotten a 501c3 nonprofit status for a new group of some sort?
Yes, yes, called One Mind Foundation. And Feed the People is actually one of the concepts under One Mind Foundation. It's basically making sure that everybody has food. And also to help the homeless, elder care projects. So we just got 501c status after waiting 6 months, and we can now accept donations, and hopefully, as soon as we get financing for a lot of the projects, we're just going to put them into action. So,
how can we get in touch? What's your telephone number?
Okay, the number for One Mind Foundation is 425-3202. And anybody that's wanting to bring some support, let me know.
And Patty, I know, how's Elizabeth doing? Another homeless activist who has been not in the best of health.
I took Elizabeth out of the hospital 2 days ago. She was in Dominican Hospital in rehab for about 12 days. She's 78 years old. She's got emphysema, and on top of it, she developed bronchitis. So it came to a point where she could not breathe at all. So we rushed her to Dominican Emergency. They stabilized her, and the doctor recommended that she stay in the hospital so she can breathe again.
What does she do to pay that? What kind of insurance, or how would you pay a hospital bill?
Yeah, you can't. It's about $5,200 a night, a full 24 hours in a room at Dominican Hospital. And every time they bring some kind of a machine in, you know, to take your blood pressure, to take the oxygen, to whatever, you pay more. So she has, she's lucky. She has Medicare, and Medicare will cover about 80% of it, and then Blue Cross is her backup. But if you don't have that kind of money, you know, it will devastate you. In 4 or 5 days, it will wipe out any savings you have. So we need universal health care in this country. We got big corporations on welfare. The biggest ones never pay a penny in taxes. So let's get them off of welfare. And let's help the people, because that's what the country's supposed to be. And instead of government by the corporation, for the corporation, of the corporation, bring it back, government of the people, by the people, for the people, and put our priorities in order, you know? We don't have to be the policemen, firemen, and gendarme of the world putting out little brush fires everywhere. It's none of our business. You know, let's get out of South America. Let's get out of Afghanistan. Let's get out of...
We've got to keep our coke profits high down there. You understand.
That's right. I forgot. You know, I keep forgetting, Robin, that we
got... He's getting older, you know.
Well, yeah, it's a brain slip. Yeah, I forgot we got...
Line, man.
We got to take care of our stockholders. Yeah, right. Sure. And that's what they're doing. Okay, so that's my...
Any comments from you, John, on this subject? Or any subject for that?
Well, actually, I can relate to that because last year when I was in the accident with Sean, I was in the hospital for about 3 days and I had no insurance. And I was actually forced out of the hospital in 3 days and I had a concussion that lasted 6 weeks. And I haven't been able to pay, like, for the helicopter bill, which is like $2,000, the CAT scan, another $2,000, and so on. And, you know, it's just an unfortunate situation we have in this country where people have don't have adequate health insurance.
You're referring to the accident that killed Sean Halimi, one of the founders of Feed the People, who was so determined to feed people every night, even in the face of the police and the merchants who wanted him gone, and he said, nope. He said, manja, manja, is what he said. Any comments?
On the topic of insurance?
Anything you'd like.
Anything? I don't know. I mean, I think I've just recently moved away from home, and I've just started to deal with insurance. I have catastrophic insurance if anything major happens, but if... I mean, I don't know where that line is drawn, so I wonder about that, about people that are living on the streets and might not have that insurance or any way to pay amazing amount of money that they charge in hospitals. It's sad.
It's rip-off city, folks.
Sure.
Patty, you're upset also at something that happened recently, Dominican?
Well, it happened about 3-4 months ago, where a member of WHAM... who was evicted from his apartment, was looking for a place, and Elizabeth and I took him in.
And let him stay in one of the...
And let him stay in our RV. And
illegally stay in your RV?
Well, he was only there one night, so I don't think it was illegal yet. It undoubtedly would have become illegal because he was welcome to stay. Anyway, he went out to dinner, and he got very sick, and he began... to throw up, and they rushed them by ambulance, which cost about $800, by the way, for a ride to the hospital. And I went over to see him the next day, and he told me, Patty, they're going to get me out of here. They're going to move me out of here. He says, I don't feel good at all. So I went to the head nurse, and I said, have you taken his vitals? And she said, oh, Dr. So-and-so said he could leave, and we'll put him in a nursing home somewhere. So I said, he's very sick. You really should take his vitals. So they sent somebody down with a machine to take his pulse and heartbeat, and, et cetera. And while they were hooking him up, he sat up in bed and then tried to get out of bed, and he threw up blood all over the place. And I said to the nurse, he can't leave here. He has to stay because he's so sick. She said, okay. So they kept him one more day, and I think it was because he was homeless. He didn't have any money. And the next day they shipped him out to some nursing home, Wavecrest, or one of those places. And this man had hepatitis C, and he had AIDS, and he was very, very sick.
What happened to him, do you know?
I think another member of WHAM moved out of their apartment, and he was able to move in. It was much cheaper. And he died one day before he was being evicted from that apartment.
And how long ago was that?
Oh, about 3 months ago.
So this all happened about a month period.
Yeah, sure, in the last November.
And that's Free Radio Santa Cruz you've been listening to, 96.3 FM, and will be hopefully listening to. This is the Lahong version of Bathrop Spears' Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are now going to, you were listening to a series of interviews. That was Patty Long, John Earth, and myself talking about 4 or 5 days ago on Pacific Avenue on a number of subjects. Got a brief chat with Elizabeth Gipps, who is still hanging in there and apparently has been able to, she's still with us. That's what I want to say, and she's still, she sounds good to me. So here's a tip of the hat to Elizabeth. We'll hope that continues. About 2 months ago, I was in San Francisco, and I arranged a talk to an author, a legal scholar named Godfrey Lehman. And Mr. Lehman has written two books, actually a number of books, on the issue of jury nullification and jury power. And some folks who've followed this show for a number of years, and we've been doing this show for about 6 or 7 years, have been aware that this is a favorite subject of mine. My belief that if we can only inform the citizenry that one juror saying no can end this drug war, if systematically done, could have a tremendous impact. The what's called jury nullification. In order to convict people in jury trials, 12 jurors have to agree to convict. It's also true to acquit. You need 12 jurors to agree to acquit. But one juror can say no and what's called produce a hung jury. And the hung jury means that the DA has to either drop the charges or try another jury trial, which could be expensive for the county to do that. And this is going to become particularly important as the drug war enters the Proposition 36 phase this summer. That is the law, you may remember, passed by the state voters that requires treatment rather than jail for first-time users of heroin, let's say. And that's going to mean that people will, because they don't have to worry about getting long jail terms, start using the juries more. And that's going to mean the juries, if they're well-educated, one jury member, and he doesn't and she doesn't have to say why, just says, no, I don't believe this man should be convicted. And you can do that because you think the law is wrong, because you think the prosecution is wrong, because you whatever you think. The question for you is whether this man should be found guilty, not whether you should follow the mathematical formula of the law or the judge's instructions. You are dealing with justice and jail time here, and you have a right to make those choices as a member of the community making those choices. So I think that jury nullification, as it's called, or jury power is very important, and so does Godfrey Lehman. He's written a book about where jury power came from, which is the case of Edward Bushell way back in the 17th century in England, where they used to lock juries up until they came back with the verdicts that the judges wanted. They would not give them food, they would not give them water, they wouldn't dump their chamber pots. It was pretty horrible. People got sick. One person even died under these circumstances where judges would try to force juries to give the verdict they wanted. And in this case, they refused to give a verdict that the judge wanted. It was William Penn, the founder of the Quaker religion, or one of the founders, Pennsylvania, that kind of thing. He was holding a religious service on the steps of a church because they wouldn't allow him to have a Quaker church. It was illegal in England, and they accused him of a violation of the Conventicle Act in 1670 or 71. He went to a jury.